What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Plant the Spear Podcast. I'm your host, Jesse, and thanks for tuning in. Hope you guys are all having a great week, coming off of a fun weekend where Florida State moved to 2-0 with another dominating win, this time over Southern Miss, 66-13. They moved to the number 3 spot in the AP poll, and they just continue the momentum that they got after that big LSU win. And we really kind of wondered how this team was going to respond on a short week against a lesser opponent after they've been told they were good all week long. And while things did get off to a slow start for the offense, the defense had a great day, or a great night, should I say, and they won this game as good as you can expect. I mean, 53-point victory, scored 66 points, the most in the Norvell era. So it was really just a dominant performance, even though the offense got off to a slow start. But we're going to talk about that game. We're going to talk about some other news that broke. Clemson kickoff time has been announced. We're going to preview the Boston College game. If it even happens, where it happens, when it happens, we don't know. Hurricane Lee, as I'm sure most of you know, is in the Atlantic and headed right their way for right about Saturday midday. So we're kind of waiting to see what happens there. That's why I wanted to wait a little bit later in the week to record. I was going to try and do something a little earlier, but I want to give you guys the most up-to-date preview. So we're just kind of waiting to see how that goes. There really hasn't been any updates as far as where the game, if it's going to be moved or anything like that. So we're still waiting on that. But before we get ahead of ourselves, man, what a fun weekend it was. I got to be back in Tallahassee at Doak for this game. We tailgated all day around a bunch of Noel fans, which was really fun. Of course, you always love to spend Saturdays at Doak. It's such a great time. And we got to try the new Legacy Lager, which I really liked. It's the official beer of Florida State, put out by Oyster City Brewing Company. The can looks awesome. It's garnet and gold. I got a picture of it on social media if you guys want to check that out. And I really like it. If you're the type of person that enjoys a frosty beverage on Saturdays, then this is one I do recommend. It's got a good flavor, but it's not too heavy to drink out in the heat. And boy, was it hot out there Saturday during the daytime. Thank goodness this game was at night, but we were baking out there during the daytime waiting on the game to start. But it was still fun. I mean, like I said, anytime you're out there just tailgating around a bunch of Noel fans, I had some people come by that we got to meet up with, some people we tried to meet up with, but the cell phone service is so bad there. You know, when you talk about some of the renovations, and we'll talk about some of the Doak renovations that are coming online soon, man, we just really need to get some Wi-Fi there, because it is so hard as a content creator and as someone who's really just trying to meet up with other people at the game, where you can't get in contact with your audience for like 4 hours out of the night during the game. I even was trying to get score updates on Texas and Alabama, and I had to have somebody text me the score updates because I couldn't even get my phone to load the ESPN app. And I mean, I'm not a big on-the-phone guy during the game. I'm there to watch the game. But at the same time, there are so many TV timeouts and halftime and between quarters and all these things where you just may even want to check scores, and it's just hard. So I think Wi-Fi really needs to be at the top of the list. You know, Michael Alford, if you're listening to this, give the people what they want. We need Wi-Fi, better Wi-Fi in the stadium. So, or if you want to hook your boy up with the media Wi-Fi password, I'd really appreciate that as well, because I don't have media passes. Like I said, I like to be in the crowd. I like to do the war chant. I like to mix it up with everybody. And I had a great time, and Doak really did look good. The announced attendance was like close to 75,000. We knew it was going to be pretty good at night. The only home game, true home game in September, coming off of that big LSU win. So it was nice to see Doak packed and loud. And you already know the Virginia Tech game, the next home game, is already sold out. We got to see the new lights, the LED upgrades that they did inside Doak. And I think it really looked good. They did a red, white, and blue overlay, which I posted a picture of during the national anthem. And I thought it really added a nice touch. I also think they really didn't overuse the lights, which was nice. I mean, you know, they do the kind of the flashing during the touchdown celebration. And anytime you score 66 points in a game, you're kind of worried that you might give the whole stadium a seizure by the time it's all said and done. But I think it was a tasteful use, and it does add to the game day. Now, I saw some people say it's not the greatest on TV, which I do understand that can be an issue as well. But overall, I do like the upgrade, and there's a lot coming. This is one of many. Now, we've already seen a few with some of the different signs and things that they put up around the stadium, some of the painting that they've done, but there's going to be some major renovations coming up, and we're going to talk about that later in the show. I also got the chance to stop by our sponsor, Alumni Hall, picked up some new Noel gear that I desperately needed, got some great stuff that I had my eye on for a while, Got to talk with the staff for a little bit, just some great people that work there, very friendly, very helpful, even talked ball with one of the guys for a minute and got a new YouTube subscriber out of it, so shout out to him for that. Now, while we're talking about Alumni Hall, I want to remind you guys of the giveaway that they're having, the Seminole Sweepstakes, because you don't want to miss this opportunity. You can win 4 tickets to the Duke game, hospitality passes, and a $200 gift card to stock up on FSU gear. While you're there, because you know you're going to buy some FSU gear anyway, you might as well get a discount on it. Use code SPEARD online or in-store to get 10% off your order and save some money. Go hit up that giveaway because you don't want to miss that opportunity. We're also going to be having a giveaway of our own. I got some things planned. I'm working on it this week. I'll have the details real soon, so stay tuned for that as well. And getting into some things here, let me set the stage. First off, we're going to talk about the Southern Miss game. Then we're going to get into some news that broke about the Clemson kickoff time. I got some thoughts on that as well. Talk about some games from around the country. And of course, like we said, tack on the BC preview at the end. But first things first, let's talk about the Southern Miss game and what we saw from Florida State on Saturday night. Now, like we mentioned in the opening, I think when you consider the fact that Southern Miss is a Group of 5 team from the Sun Belt. They were a bowl team last year. They have a couple of players on that team. It's not like you were out playing some 3-win FCS team, you know, looking at you, Clemson, where they played Charleston Southern, and it was 24-17 at halftime. Charleston Southern was a 3-win FCS team last year. You look at North Carolina. They played another Sun Belt team from the Group of 5 in Appalachian State, and they went to double overtime in that game. So the fact that you got this team, you know, not a Power 5 team, but a decent Group of 5 team on a short week, you just really, I know it got off to a slow start, but you really have to come to appreciate these wins after the last few years. You know, Florida State came out, this is something that we talked about in the LSU game. They didn't play the greatest brand of football in the first half, and they still hung with a top 5 team at the time within 3 points at halftime. And then you got your stuff together and you pulled away late. Looking at this game, you got off to a little bit of a slow offensive start. Now, I think the defense played lights out, especially the starters. So I don't have a whole lot of qualms there. But even with them getting off to a slow start, you were still up 4 touchdowns at halftime. You still won this game by 53 points. You know, you still scored 59 offensive points. You scored 66 total points, which was the most of the Norvell era. So this was a huge, just not, I don't want to say huge win as in like you beat a great opponent, but the fact that you came out and you beat them by 53 points, that to me, again, is something you cannot take for granted after the last few years. You know, how many times have we seen Florida State come into a game like this? And I know this isn't the same team as the last few years, but find themselves in a game that they shouldn't have been in. So even for you to not play your greatest brand of football on one side of the ball and still win the way you did, it speaks to the potential that this team has. If they can fire on all cylinders on both sides of the ball at the same time, like we saw in the second half of the LSU game, it speaks to how much better this team has gotten, that you don't really even have to play your best game to still go out and win by 50 points. Now, when you play a team like Clemson or even maybe Miami, that game's looking a little harder later in the year, Duke, you're going to need to bring your A game. So I do think that's one of the things about this schedule, where initially it looked a little bit rough in September. We knew that, but I like the way that it's set up because you had the big test against LSU, and you passed it. But then you also had the game afterwards against Southern Miss where you could clean some things up. And then you have a trip to Boston College, who looks terrible this year. Now, that doesn't mean we can overlook them, but you have kind of another dress rehearsal to get things sorted out before that big game against Clemson. And then you get the bye week to kind of clean everything up, rest, and get healthy before the stretch. So to me, it's a great way to set up the schedule. And I think Florida State needed this game in a way because they've been told how good they are all week. And to see some mistakes happen, I think they're going to kind of go back into practice and realize that there's some things they can clean up. But it wasn't all bad by any means. I mean, you still put up 31 points in the first half. You still outgained them 294 yards to 88 in the first half. I think you saw a lot of positives from the offense. We said in the preview that we wanted to see the run game get going here because they did okay during LSU, 135 yards on the ground, I believe it was in that game. We thought they could get over 200 in this one because we saw them rush for over 200 yards in 8 games last year. I thought we could get a run game going, and they did. They ran for over 300 yards, over 8 yards a carry, 8.3, And we saw some, we saw Trey Benson get going. You saw Tua Philly is, he's just a special back, man. He's got, he can break one. He's such a patient, shifty runner. I really enjoy watching him run the ball. And that's really the starters. Now, when you get down to the depth chart, we saw some backups get in that had a really good game as well. I thought Kasiah Holmes was a guy that I really wanted to see. Came in, had a good performance, got a touchdown. His first for FSU, you saw CJ Campbell get in and get some action at running back. So I think the running game is really what kind of stood out in this one. Obviously, we have to talk about the drop passes. And, you know, I don't want to be negative about this game in general, because there's a lot of people that kind of like poo-pooed on the offense and things that happen. A lot of people are ready to just write Johnny Wilson off, and the drops are a problem. Don't get me wrong. He's got six of them, I think, six or seven in the first two games. It's something that's got to get cleaned up, and it's not just Johnny Wilson. We saw a couple other guys have some drops too, a couple of other guys that didn't go win some of the 50-50 balls that we kind of expected them to, and Southern Miss played well. Their secondary did, I thought. But the thing is, when you look at Johnny Wilson, like he's kind of a boom or bust type of receiver. And it's just, it appears to me like he's in a mental slump right now. I mean, we know that he has drop problems. But at the same time, anytime your confidence takes a hit, and you also have, I don't know, this team is such a family atmosphere. I don't know that this is a part of it, but you also have that other dominant receiver, Keon Coleman, come in, kind of steal the spotlight. And then you have some struggles with drops in the first game, even though you still had a 100-yard game. But I think it's just sometimes when you get in your own head, and I do think that it's more of a mental slump than anything. And that's why I think, barring like any crazy weather where you just really can't throw the ball, say 30-mile-an-hour winds in this game, in the Boston College game, I think you're going to see Mike Norvell feed Johnny Wilson consistently to build that mental confidence back up, to get out of that slump, because he is a really big part of this offense. You cannot write him off. You know, Keon Coleman's still a really good wide receiver. He's going to play on Sundays, but it definitely doesn't hurt to have that 6'7" mismatch on the other side. And so you need to get him going, because there's going to be some times where you're going to need him to come up in big games. And he's always going to be one of those players where they throw the ball and you're going to hold your breath, because you don't know if it's either going to be a spectacular catch or if it's going to be a really ugly drop. But you really need him to get in rhythm, to get things going. Now, he did come out in street clothes in the second half. I don't know if that was just kind of a, hey, man, take the night off, you're struggling, or if there was an injury thing there. He was at practice from the footage or the pictures that I saw. So I don't think it's an injury thing. Again, I just think you got to get him out of the slump. But he's a huge part of this offense, and you want him to get back rolling, so that he can help the other receivers too. And he's also an excellent blocker. So you need Johnny Wilson on the field. We got to clean some of these drops up. And again, it's not all Johnny Wilson. He wasn't the only one to drop passes. Now, not every ball was perfect from Jordan. I thought as a whole, the offense kind of had a sluggish start there. But and to be fair, like on Jordan's part, there was a lot of pressure in the backfield, which initially I was a little worried about, because sometimes it's hard to get a read on things when you're in the stadium. But when you go back and watch, Southern Miss, they had a clear game plan. It was to pressure Jordan Travis and to not let those receivers have a chance to beat them down the field. They blitzed a lot. 56.3% of the time they sent pressure. So you could tell that they knew they could not cover these guys, and that they had to get pressure to not allow them to work downfield. So overall, I mean, when you look at the pressure, they did blitz very heavily. And Jordan, again, he's just a cheat code. Like, the scrambling that he does to avoid pressure while also keeping his eyes down the field and still having the ability to just tuck it and run is next level. And we also saw Keon Coleman, who is becoming a human highlight reel, had the leaping, you know, the catch where he leaped over the Southern Miss defender. Just, man, he's such a fun player to watch. And he has been such a huge addition to this offense. I mean, imagine if Johnny was still struggling and you didn't have Keon Coleman, which really speaks to how big of a get that was this offseason. And when you talk about the pass game, like we said, it wasn't all bad. I mean, you still saw Keon Coleman get going there. You still saw some other guys have a big game. Darian Williamson was a guy that came in and got some touches. And this is a player who came in last year against Boston College, had 98 yards and a touchdown. And then he's dealt with injury his whole career so far. We saw him make a few plays in the bowl game, but he's really just kind of been hit or miss as far as injury luck. So he gets overlooked, but he's a guy that's got size, speed, and skill. And when he's healthy and when he's able to play, he is an impact player. And I think the interesting thing about this offense and something that we saw in this game, Florida State said that they put out that they played 102 different players in this game, which is something that we wanted to see in this one, was them start to build that younger depth to start to get these guys experience. And that's where a lot of the excitement came, was from some of the younger receivers. Like we said, when you saw Darren Williamson get in there, this is a guy who didn't even see the field against LSU, who's an impact player for you, that as you get him more experience, as you get him game snaps in this offense, he's going to become a bigger part of the game plan. You also saw Hakeem Williams get involved, Vandrevious Jacobs. We saw Deuce Spann get involved. Now, he had a little bit of struggle catching the ball. Some of the ball placements weren't great, but you also see the flashes of what he can be, and especially when you saw him get that end around or reverse. He's just got incredible speed and an incredible ability to run the ball in the open field for the size that he has. And that's the thing. Like, Norvell's going to find a way to get his playmakers the ball, whether it be, you know, maybe if you're struggling to catch it, they're going to hand it off to you or some way or another. But he's too good of an athlete not to have the ball in his hands. And I think that they're trying to get him to be a bigger part of this offense. And I think Saturday night was a good step in that direction. We've seen Winston Wright put together a couple of nice catches in the last few games. Now, he did have a fumble, going to have to hold that ball a little bit tighter. But overall, I think what you saw from a lot of the younger guys was positive. And that's something that we really wanted to see in this game, was them start to develop some of those guys. You know, like we said, you saw a lot from the backs, Kazai Holmes, CJ Campbell, these guys that are getting in and getting that work. And these are going to be the guys that are going to not only be the future of your program, which speaks to, yeah, you're going to lose some guys in the future, but you also have a lot of these talented pieces that are flashing when they get a chance, that you feel good about the talent floor and where it is at in this program now. And to see them start to get that experience, because you're going to see them a lot throughout the season. Once some of these games get out of hand, which is what we expect, or guys need a night off or whatever the case may be, it's great to have that experience. And then you saw them flash in this game. So I think on offense, they got off to a slow start. But again, just being on a short week against a decent team, I don't think it's really time to like sound a panic alarm, because again, you still put up 59 offensive points. You still put almost 300 yards in the first half. So I think it was fine. They're going to be okay. Now, when you talk about the defense, I think the defense really had a lights-out type of game, especially when you look at the starters. Now, I understand there's going to be some criticism on Fuller because you give up some yards and maybe allow some points late in the game, but a lot of that comes from your backup defense, who are guys like Blake Nicholson. He had a great interception out of bounds, you know, but you see the potential from him, but that was his very first game. These guys are still learning the game. There's a lot of young players out there that are going to give up some yardage. When you look at what the starters did in the first half, you held them to just 88 yards, under 100 yards in the first half, which is impressive. The defensive line was in the quarterback's lap all night. And while the sack numbers really didn't show up and stand out, I think a lot of that has to do with Southern Miss's game plan. And I think they really kind of did have a good game plan in this one, even though it didn't work out in the end. But you could tell on offense as well that their game plan was to just get the ball out of his hands, because they knew they couldn't block this defensive line. And we did say in the preview that their offensive line wasn't going to be that great this year, and Florida State's defensive line just ran right through them pretty much the whole night. And when you look at the quarterback's numbers, he had a 31.4% completion percentage, zero touchdowns, one interception, and only 4.4 yards per attempt, which tells you it was a snap-and-throw type of game plan. You weren't going to let you weren't having things develop down the field. So it was a snap and throw and a snap and throw, because you knew you couldn't block them. And I mean, they delivered some punishing hits on him the other night in that game. And this defensive line across the board is good. I mean, Jared Verse, obviously we know is Jared Verse, but you're seeing a lot develop from the defensive tackle group. And you really haven't even seen who we feel is your best defensive tackle, Fabian Lovett. He's still working his way back from injury. He has not played a lot yet, but you haven't needed them to. And that's the exciting thing, is you don't have to play these guys through injury. You can allow them to work their way back in. You're seeing a lot from Dennis Briggs, who, you know, we talked about, this is a guy who can be an impact player when he's healthy. He's been a productive player throughout his career. When you stop and look at the pressure numbers and the things he's able to do, It's just we know last year he wasn't himself coming off of that injury. So, again, I think when you look at the depth you're building by letting some of those more veteran guys work their way back in that are coming off injuries and working in the younger guys, you're starting to build that depth. And this defensive line is a dominant group. I think what you saw from the secondary, they gave up a few plays, but overall it was, you know, you were fine there. You feel good about what you had. They really couldn't, I mean, they couldn't pass a whole lot because of the pressure that was in his in the quarterback's lap, like we talked about. I do like that you saw another week with an interception, back-to-back interceptions, which is something we wanted to see from the secondary. And it just so happened to be a pick six, first of his career for Jerrion Jones. So shout out to him for having a big pick six there. He's actually currently, per PFF, graded as the top cornerback in the country. Now, I'm starting to lose a lot of my faith in PFF, and we talk about all the time, they're not the gospel, but they actually credited Florida State with zero drops the other night. So I'm not sure. Maybe the game, and you know, it's funny, I would say I don't know what game they were watching. Maybe it got too late for them, and man, that 8:30 kick was rough. I'm telling you guys, like, the older I get, man, it's hard to stay up. That game ran forever, and this was my first time being at a game with a running clock. It didn't really feel like it sped things up much. I mean, it was like, man, this game just kept going and kept going. But I do think when overall, like I said, when you look at what the defense was able to do, they got a lot of pressure. They limited what they were able to do when the starters were in. You held them under 5 yards per play, which is now the second week in a row that you've done that. You've also put up over 7 yards per play on offense, which is, again, the second week in a row that you've been able to do that. You are currently sitting top five in scoring offense at 55.5 points per game. And scoring defense, it's not as good. It's at 52nd, but you're only allowing 18.5 points per game on average. But really the thing about that is a lot of the teams who are ahead of you haven't really played anybody yet, so they've shut out a lot of bad teams. Like, for instance, I've seen Syracuse get a lot of attention about having a really dominant first two games, but they played Colgate and Western Michigan. So they haven't played LSU, and you know they played an FCS team. Like, if Florida State had played North Alabama in this game, who they play second to last game of the year, I mean, that game could be 100-0 if you wanted to. So when you look at the level of competition, I think Florida State has done really well against some of the best two, you know, and I'm not saying Southern Miss is good. I'm just saying it's not a bad FCS team. So you've done really well against solid competition. I mean, when you look at some of the teams on your schedule, there's no guarantee that they could even really beat Southern Miss. I mean, Boston College is just an absolute you-know-what show going on right now. But we're going to talk about them real soon. But again, overall, just to kind of put a bow on Southern Miss, I think that it was a good performance by the defense. You held 50% of their rushes under 2 yards. We saw a lot of players get in and have a good night. Conrad Hussey was a guy that popped on film. Almost had a big interception. It just kind of got it. I think it bounced off the ground right before he got to it. Of course, Akeem Dent left with a non-contact injury. Looked like a hamstring. Didn't see any crutches or anything like that. So hopefully it's not anything serious. But, you know, a hamstring can be one of those that can nag throughout the year. So we'll have to kind of monitor that situation. You may not even see him play against Boston College because why risk it? Why not let him heal up? Let Conrad Hussey play in this game, because if he can't, for some reason, if Dent can't go against, say, Clemson or somebody like that, you want him to have a little bit more experience before you have to be thrust into that big game situation. And you might as well let him rest, because I think you can beat Boston College without Akeem Dent. I think you're fine there. But, you know, like we talked about, it wasn't the most efficient night by the offense, but I think that anytime you can still put up 59 offensive points, even against a group of five team that, you know, you just kind of have to live with some of the days that they have an off day. And at least it came against Southern Miss. Now, you're going to need to bring your A game against the better teams on your schedule. But like we talked about, it just speaks to the ceiling that this team has when they can get firing on all cylinders. And that's what we saw in the second half of the LSU game. But I think it is exciting, too, that knowing we expect this offense to be really, really good, you are seeing a defense, especially the starting defense, that has been able to carry this team so far. We thought maybe early in the season that this might be, okay, well, you might have to play some kind of Big 12 type ball in certain games where you need to score 40 points to win. But right now, it really looks like Florida State's defense is kind of stealing the show. And of course, Florida State's offense is still doing really good. Like, we act like they had a bad game, and while it wasn't their greatest, you know, this is still a team that scored over 35 points now in 8 games, And you would expect them, unless, you know, the weather is just a crazy limiting factor, to get that next week as well. So this offense is still producing. Even if it, sometimes it doesn't look great, they're still producing, and they have a defense that is carrying, kind of holding the line for them while they get some things sorted out. So overall, I think it was a good performance where you did what you needed to do. You got a big win. It looked fine. The game was never in question. It was never close. And you got a lot of players some valuable game experience. And now you prepare for conference play. And up next is Boston College. So we'll go ahead and talk about them. My voice cracked a little bit, y'all. I do a lot of chanting and yelling at the game. So sometimes it gets a little hard to record after being at a game and stuff. So anyway, talking about Boston College, man, it's so weird with this team because I actually thought Boston College was going to be one of the most improved teams this year because of the offensive line issues that they had last year. And they got a lot of those cleaned up. So it's almost puzzling to me how they've been so bad. Now, I did read a piece on the whole quarterback situation there, and it really seems kind of strange because we thought coming into the season that Jeff Hafley might be coaching for his job. And you had Emmett Moorhead there, who was the presumed starter, went to ACC Media Days. Everything, all signs pointed to him being the starter. He threw for over 250 yards in their last three of their last four games last year, even led them to a win at NC State. But then they have been playing Thomas Castellanos, who came in as, I believe it was a sophomore, only had 1 year at UCF, really didn't have a lot of experience. They said he had a good camp, more of a dual threat guy, but they said from the beginning that they were planning on a two quarterback system. And I thought maybe Moorhead had got injured because you saw him come in, didn't really play a whole lot, and then Castellanos got put in there. But they said this was their plan all along. They were going to give him the start and then put Castellanos in. And to me, it was just weird because when you have a guy who might be on the hot seat, might be coaching for his job, to kind of experiment early in the season seems a little odd when you have a guy who had a good end of the season last year. But Thomas Castellanos is a guy that has a higher ceiling. He brings a dual threat ability. He just doesn't have the experience. And there's some other things in there, I think, that are limiting him. Obviously, not having Zay Flowers hurts as well. But taking a look at Boston College, they currently, as far as their scoring offense, are 78th in the country at 27.5 points per game. Like we mentioned earlier, Florida State is at 55.5 points per game, which is fourth in the country. Scoring defense, Boston College is at 93rd, also, oddly enough, allowing 27.5 points per game. Florida State is at 18.5 points per game, or 52nd in the country, which, again, we know one of the touchdowns was garbage time against LSU, and then some of the points came late against Southern Miss once you'd already pulled your starters. Explosive plays, they have 7 so far this season, which is 95th. FSU has 15 plays, and these are plays of over 20 yards. Florida State has 15 so far, which is 12th in the country. On third downs, Boston College is at 43.3% conversion rate, which is 66th in the country. Florida State is at 50% even, which is 35th. Third down defense, now they are pretty bad on third down defense. Allowing 53.85% of conversions, which is 126th in the country. Florida State is only allowing 26.1%, which is 15th in the country. And I don't want to load you guys down with too many stats, but you know this is what we do in our previews. We roll through some of the numbers here. I just don't want you guys' eyes to glaze over and we start reading too many. So I think this year we're going to try and streamline it a little bit. It includes some stats, but not too much. So keeping going, it's funny, both of these teams have a 100% scoring percentage in the red zone so far. So both have done good in the red zone. When you look at sacks allowed, Boston College has only allowed 1 sack so far this season. FSU has only allowed 2. But they also have a mobile quarterback, and his legs are a threat. And so that's something we're going to talk about here in just a minute. But when you look at the red zone defense, they have allowed 100% of scoring attempts whenever the teams get in the red zone, which is tied for 92nd. Florida State is at 32nd, allowing 71.43%. in the red zone. So their defense, their red zone offense is pretty good, but their red zone defense is really bad. And one of the stats that surprised me a little bit was the sacks by Boston College. They're 106 in the country right now. They've only got 2 sacks on the season. And that's a little surprising because they do have an all ACC defensive end. I'm probably going to butcher his name. So I think it's Azikaru or something like that. I feel bad because I actually talked to him at ACC Media Day. Super nice guy. A great interview, but I feel bad that I can't pronounce his last name. But Anyway, it's just surprising that they've only been able to produce 2 sacks. Now, Florida State has 6 sacks on the season, 38th in the country, which again, we know that Southern Miss, they only had 2 in that game, I believe, and they were kind of, you know, the game plan had a lot to do with that. Now, as far as we talked about explosive plays, but what about explosive plays allowed? So far, they've given up 10 plays of 20 plus yards, which is 91st in the country. Florida State has given up 8, which was sitting at 62nd. Another thing about Boston College that I noticed, they have 10 penalties apiece in their first 2 games. So not the most disciplined team. And while Florida State did have a little bit of issue with penalties in the first game, even though we know we attribute a lot of that to the refs and just terrible officiating, they did clean up some of that in the second game with only having 3 penalties against Southern Miss. So that could be a little something to watch for there as well. Now, looking at what they've done so far this season, now that we've had a couple of games, you know, with Southern Miss, we really just kind of went off the preseason preview because they had only played 1 FCS team so far. Game 1, they lost 27-24 in overtime to Northern Illinois. Northern Illinois is not good. They lost the following week to an FCS school, Southern Illinois, 14-11. This was a hard loss for them to begin with. Now, they did experiment in this game with the quarterback situation, and it did get better in Game 2, but they also played an FCS team in Game 2. But looking at what they did against Northern Illinois, they put up 314 yards of offense, 168 pass, 146 rush, only 4.29 yards per play, which is not good. 39% success rate, 6% explosive play rate. Just, I mean, it's not been a good start, or at least that game. It, like I said, it was better in Game 2, but that was just not a very good game for them. They're sitting at 90th in total offense when you look at it from a yards per play perspective at 5.4 yards per play, whereas Florida State, on the other hand, they are currently sitting top 10 in the country at 7.76 yards per play. Now, keeping going down the line with what they did against NIU, they had 56% of their runs go for 4-plus yards, which are called opportunity runs, so they are able to move the ball decently on the ground. Like we said, almost 150 yards of rushing. 24% of their runs got stopped for 2 yards or less. Northern Illinois put up 338 yards, 172 passing, 166 on the ground, 4.37 yards per play. They also had a 39% success rate. So when you look at what Boston College's defense was able to do, it wasn't terrible. But then you also look at that next week where they played Southern Illinois, who was a 5-6 FCS team the previous year in 2022. They only ran for 63 yards against them. They only put up 11 points in that game. So, you know, when you start to add context to things, it just keeps getting worse for Boston College. Now, moving on to their game last week, they beat Holy Cross 38-31. Yikes, that's not great, but I will say that Holy Cross is a really good FCS team. They were 12-1 last year in 2022. Their only loss came against South Dakota State, who was number 1, and it was in the playoffs. They're currently a top 5 FCS team. So, I mean, anytime you play them, you should still win regardless. You have way more talent. You have a better roster than they do. But when you have a team like Boston College that's struggling and you play a better FCS team, then you can find yourself in a close game like this. And the only reason I really bring that up is because it's just not the same when you're talking about one of the best FCS teams in the country. I mean, we've seen North Dakota State go in and upset FBS teams on the regular. So it's not the same as playing like Charleston Southern, like Clemson did, where they were only a 3-win FCS team the previous year. But anyway, so they beat them 38-31, and there was no turnovers in that game. And I went and looked, and I was like, okay, well, maybe it was just a fluky game where Boston College turned the ball over a lot, and it was not the case. Of course, like we mentioned, they had 10 penalties in the game, but it's not like they turned the ball over 3 or 4 times to let them get back in it, which has really been what's kept Clemson struggling with these teams, is a lot of turnovers. Now, what really stands out to me is Boston College's defense might be the issue. So last year, we know their defense was pretty good. Not great, but middle-of-the-road defense. But when you look at what their offense did last year, it was pretty terrible. Now, this year, it seems like their defense seems to be the weakness, and their offense isn't a whole lot better. So in this game, Boston College put up 5.88 yards per play, had a 54% success rate, 7% explosive play rate. So things trended up. They looked a little better. 201 passing yards, 2 touchdowns. Now, Castellanos only had a 23.4 QBR in this, which is pretty bad. They had 202 rushing yards, 4.5 yards per carry on 45 attempts. I don't know if there's a health issue or maybe they were just resting him up in this game, but Garwell only had 2 carries for 14 yards. And then when you look at what Holy Cross was able to do, they averaged 7.3 yards per play in this game, which is crazy for an FCS team to have that against a Power 5 opponent. 50% success rate, 26% explosive play rate. Now, when I saw that, I was like, okay, maybe they just can't cover him and they just had a one-on-one that they just exploited the whole game. But out of 14 explosive plays, 9 of them came on the ground. So they ran all over Boston College's defense. They put up 267 rushing yards in that game on 38 attempts, averaged 6.8 yards per carry. Of the runs that were, like we talked about, opportunity runs that are 4-plus yards. And the reason they say they're opportunity runs is because those keep the chains moving. You get 3 runs of 4-plus and you got a first down. So you keep the chains moving there. And 50% of their runs went for 4-plus yards. Now, they did have one run of 35 yards and one run of 45 yards, and they only threw for 130 pass yards. But I want to say it was bad weather in that game as well, too. I think it did get delayed. You know, we saw a number of games on the East Coast last week get delayed, so thankfully we didn't have to deal with that due to bad weather. But again, when you look at what they were able to do on the ground in this game, Boston College's defense really just kind of looks like they're struggling to find some footing. And while their defensive line and linebackers do have some experience, when I went back and turned on the film, because I really wanted to kind of watch what they were able to do, and I didn't see the Holy Cross game, but I watched Northern Illinois, man, their defense is, it's just, you see some opportunities for this offense. We'll just say that. They did not cover Northern Illinois very well. There was a lot of plays that were open that where they allowed their guys to work in space. Boston College played some soft coverage. There was a lot of missed opportunities by Northern Illinois where they had guys in one-on-ones with a clear matchup that they wanted, that the quarterback threw it behind them. So to me, if Florida State's offense, weather aside, we're going to assume right now that there's no weather. If they can get things going, watching these DBs work against some of the players for Northern Illinois and knowing the difference in the two offenses that you're going to see between Florida State and Northern Illinois, which is a massive gap, I mean, Florida State is going to be able to feast in this game on this defense. Now, of course, Boston College, like I said, they got better in from game one to game two. And to be all, you know, to be honest, seeing what Northern Illinois did against Southern Illinois, Holy Cross could probably beat Northern Illinois. So that was a better, more than likely a better FCS team that they faced in week two than what they did against Northern Illinois in game one. But, you know, when you look at this offense, you know, we talked about their defense and how they've struggled. I mean, they have been run through by a couple of teams so far. Like we said, 166 yards rushing in the first game, 267 in the second game. This is another one where Florida State could put up over 200 yards on the ground, especially if you consider it may be a windy, wet game. So if you do have to keep the ball on the ground, I like for Florida State to really get that run game going here with Trey Benson and Toa Philly, and I think you'll see that may also be why Mike was really trying to get some of these backs going in this game, because you may need to just keep fresh legs in that game, because you may have to run the ball a lot in this game if the wind or something like that is, you know, just out of control. But when you watch this offense, Ryan O'Keefe, who came in from Central Florida, was supposed to be the guy that replaced Zay Flowers. Now, so far this season, he has not broke 40 yards in 2 games, and that's in each game. I think his most productive game was 38 yards, which we know quarterback play is an issue, but the O-line was terrible last year, so it's not like they had a great situation to throw the ball last year. And then when you look at what Zay Flowers did for their offense last year, which he was pretty much their entire offense, he only had 1 game under 40 yards the entire season, multiple games over 100 yards. It just looks like they have struggled to find a replacement for a game changer like Zay Flowers, which is hard to do. I mean, he's really good. But when you lost your best offensive player, you have a better O-line play, your running game still has not really stepped up a whole lot. Castellanos is actually the leading rusher for BC. He does have wheels. He can make people miss. So that is going to be a factor, and I'm glad that Florida State already got to see Jaden Daniels in that first game. So you do have, you know, you have some experience, you have a game plan in order that you can put for this type of quarterback, while at the same time, they do bring in Moorhead off the bench. He is a better passer for them, so they do bring him in. They are basically running a 2-quarterback system. But he has broke some runs, Castellanos has. But when you look at just, they have a better offensive line, but they still have a young quarterback who's learning, and you don't have the same explosive wide receiver this year. It's just been a struggle for their offense. And, you know, Castellanos is going to get better with experience as he goes, but he has not faced a defense even remotely close to what he's going to see against Florida State. So can you rattle that young guy? Can you get him, you know, with happy feet and running too much? Because it, right now, like when I watch some of the passes that he threw against Northern Illinois, and again, keep in mind, they did play an FCS team the second game. His completion percentage and his yardage went up in that game. He had a much better game throwing in game two than he did in game one. And I mean, it was his first game, so you got to cut him a little slack there. But some of the passes that he threw, it's just like the deep ball was so far off on a lot of these throws. Just completely underthrew, or it was like no one even really in the area. I mean, he was underthrowing receivers by 10, 20 yards. So his pass game is still developing, and I think that's why you see Moorhead come in off the bench. But overall, like we talked about, when you look at Boston College as a whole, the offense is still finding its way with a new quarterback and without Zay Flowers. And then you have a defense that has clearly taken a step back this year. That, to me, I think this might be Halfley's last year there if they don't turn some things around and fast, because you would expect for them to lose to Northern Illinois, have a close game against Holy Cross, and then more than likely kind of get dusted by Florida State. And then, I have to look at their schedule going further down the line, but it's probably not going to get a whole lot easier if they end up putting together another, say, 2 to 3 win season, maybe 4 wins. They might be looking for somebody different. Now, I don't know how serious Boston College, they don't really seem to take football that serious, so maybe they keep him around, but it seems like another bad year for Boston College. I thought they were going to be most improved. They were my most improved team that I thought, just because of the offensive line issues that got fixed. But I think Florida State is going to, and that doesn't mean they have a dominant offensive line by any means. It was just really a dumpster fire last year. So even with a better offensive line, it's still not a dominant group, and they're going to get tested in this game against Florida State, because this defensive line has been a dominant group for FSU. And so I think Florida State, if it's raining, if the weather is terrible, I think you're going to have no problem getting the ground game going, and then hopefully maybe you can pop a few over the top to keep them from completely loading the box. And as long as you can bottle up Castellanos, I don't think Florida State should have any problem stopping this offense as far as his running ability. I think if you can get that under control and make him throw to beat you, I think Florida State's got this one in a bag. Again, you can't overlook anything. I mean, Florida State is a 26-point favorite for a reason, even in a bad weather game. I think they'll cover the spread there. You do have to travel up to Boston College. It is the red bandana game. But now, especially with the weather, like, if it is played at noon, and I don't think it's going to be played at noon on Saturday, if you're moving game times around, you have bad weather, there might be evacuations in place, you could lose a lot of momentum with your crowd. So I don't think that's going to be an aspect. It's not really a loud stadium anyway. This game might even end up being played in Tallahassee. I mean, we saw them move the Boise State game from Jacksonville over to Tallahassee last minute because of the hurricane then. So this may be a situation where this game gets played in Tallahassee. It may get moved. My most likely guess would that it gets moved to Friday afternoon, because if the hurricane comes in on Saturday, midday to afternoon, you can still play the game and you can get everybody back to safety before the hurricane comes. So it's going to get moved, but even if it doesn't, the weather could be bad in this game. If you're able to get it in before the weather gets terrible and Florida State is able to throw the ball, you know, again, I just think they're really going to run away with this one. But you got to go earn it. You know, it would be nice to see them clean up a lot of the slow starts, a lot of the drop passes and things like that, knowing that you have that Clemson game right around the corner. So for me, I can't really necessarily give you a score prediction, because I don't know if it's going to be 30-mile-an-hour winds in a torrential downpour, or if it's going to be moved to Friday and be a nice game, or Tallahassee, or whatever the case may be. But I'll at least say that I think regardless, as long as Florida State shows up and is ready to play for this game, I think you're going to have no problem covering the spread at 26 points. I think they're going to still hit that 35-point mark. I think they're going to bottle up Boston College's offense, because they're just really not very good this year. But depending on whenever the game happens, like I said, I do like that you have a noon road game to kind of give you a dress rehearsal for Clemson, who is what we're going to talk about next. So most of you guys have already seen that the Clemson game is going to be a noon kick, which is very lame. I mean, this game was supposed to be nighttime, prime time, potentially a game day game. And really, the way Clemson has kind of fallen apart, fallen out of the rankings, they're not even in the top 25 anymore. The stage is not what it was. So it got knocked to a noon game. Now, do I think this may have had something to do with these are the two teams that wanted out of the ACC? These are two of the three teams that did not vote for expansion. Maybe the ACC is kind of, you know, giving it back to them a little bit. I could certainly understand that conspiracy theory. I mean, I have no problem entertaining that idea, but it is what it is. And I actually think this is a low-key blessing for Florida State. When you talk about, I thought at the beginning of the year, I picked Florida State to go 11-1. I thought they would drop this game on the road at Clemson because Death Valley is a really hard place to play. But now you look at having a Clemson team that is not quite what you thought they were going to be, and you're also getting it at noon, which kind of removes a little bit of the crowd factor. And this isn't a full-on Clemson preview. I'm just sharing some thoughts on the game starting at noon because we're gonna do a full-on preview for Clemson next week. But like I said, when you look at avoiding a nighttime game at Clemson, I don't think that's a bad thing in any way, because I did some research on this, and when you look at Clemson, they have not lost a home game at night since Florida State beat them in 2013. That is an unreal stat. Now, we know they lost last year to South Carolina. We know they lost to Pitt in 2016, but those were not night games. So to me, avoiding a night game seems like a blessing in disguise there. Now, Clemson did play two noon games at home last year, the first of which was a 27-21 win against Syracuse, a team that Florida State beat by 35 points on the road just a few games later. The second home game that they played at noon last year was a 31-30 loss versus South Carolina that snapped a 40-game home win streak. They also played a third noon game, but it was on the road. That was a double overtime win against Wake Forest. And then Florida State did play two noon games last year. They beat Georgia Tech and Louisiana Lafayette. They blew both of them out. Obviously, neither one of those teams, especially last year with Georgia Tech, is anywhere near as good as Clemson is. But the point remains that when you look at what Clemson has done at night at home versus some of the noon games that have, they've really kind of cut it close there, I think this is a clear advantage for Florida State to avoid that night game, because, you know, a lot of times students don't show up right on time. Fans are still filing in. And if Florida State can get off to a fast start, then you might can take some of the crowd out of the game. And like we said, Death Valley, the venue, the environment, the atmosphere was what really made this game tough. Not so much that I didn't think Florida State was a better team than Clemson, because I do. I think they're better across the board than Clemson. Maybe in some areas Clemson has more quote-unquote, you know, talent with 4- and 5-star players, but I think when you look at production on the field, I think Florida State's a better team. It's just it's hard to go in at Death Valley. So to me, to avoid that night game, I know a lot of people are upset that it's at noon, but, you know, it's not our fault for once. So Clemson didn't hold up their end of the deal. But I do think that is a little bit of a blessing. Now, talking about Clemson just a little bit, because like I said, we're going to do a full-on Clemson preview, but we know that they lost to Duke game one. Then you saw last week, it was 24-17 at halftime against Charleston Southern, and they got dropped from the top 25 for that. They had 5 turnovers and 2 blocked field goals in the first 2 games. So they are just kind of a sloppy mess right now. But I do want to say that as bad as that Charleston Southern game looked, the yardage split was one of the most insane that I've ever seen. Clemson had 679 yards, and Charleston Southern only had 74. So they outgained them by over 600 yards, which is absolutely nuts. Now, we know they pulled off late to make it 66-17, but again, Charleston Southern was 2-8 last year as an FCS team. They got beat by North Carolina A&T, who Southern Miss just beat 40-14, and then, you know, you blew out them by 50-plus points. Now, sometimes it gets hard to kind of connect the dots there, but I think you get the point that I'm trying to make, that the team that Florida State just beat 66-13 is a lot better than the team that they just beat 66-17. So again, I mean, they're still good. They still have a 70% blue chip ratio. Cade Klubnik came on later in that game. He's just really had he's been turnover prone. He's made some questionable throws. They still have some deficiencies at the skill positions like we talked about. And the mistakes that they said were going to get cleaned up in game one, you know, a lot of the Clemson fans came on comments and social media threads and things like that and said, we outgained Duke. We just made a lot of mistakes. they'll get cleaned up and we'll be fine. And my point was, as something that we've seen with undisciplined teams during the Willie Taggart years and towards the end of the Jimbo era, was just because teams make mistakes doesn't mean they're going to get cleaned up. And a lot of those mistakes, they reared their head again in week two. Now, they do have a little tougher opponent this week in Florida Atlantic, who's still not a Power 5 opponent. They should win that game handily. So they have another game to kind of get things right before they face Florida State. But we'll see if some of those mistakes keep happening. And if you're able to, you know, if you jump on them quick, if they come out slow. Now, it's a little concerning because Florida State has been a slow starting team, but you've also been a strong second half team. But if you can jump on them early, I think you have a really, really good shot in that game. So to me, the noon kick is just a little bit more of an advantage, makes you feel a little bit better about that game. But that's still going to be a huge game. And so I'm really excited about it. We're going to have lots of coverage for you guys next week. But that was just something I wanted to cover on that game. Like I said, the two noon games that they played at home last year was a close win at Syracuse and a loss to South Carolina. So to me, I feel a lot better about that game being at noon than I do at night in Death Valley, which is really what kind of concerned you, was the environment just being too much. So to touch on some other games, of course, we saw Miami got a nice win. We expected them to be better this year, and they are. We talked about their offensive line and how they did really well in the transfer portal with the guys that they brought in. And if they could get Tyler Van Dyke back to what we saw in 2021, they have the potential to be pretty good. And he does look like the Tyler Van Dyke that we saw in 2021. So that game's going to be a little bit harder than maybe we thought. But at the same time, I think you have to look at Texas A&M and just really what they have not done. Now, I know it's kind of hard to say, put a feather in your cap that they beat, you know, that you beat LSU when they beat LSU last year as a bad team, because that's something we kind of threw dirt on LSU for a lot in the preview, was that they lost to Texas A&M. Texas A&M has a lot of talent. They just don't do anything with it. And Jimbo, really, in year six there, has just not been impressive at all. And really, when you look at Texas A&M, we know they were 5-7 last year. They have not won a true road game since October of 2021. They are 0-9 in their last 9 true road games. I think they're 1-7 against their last 8 Power 5 teams. So that team is just not good. Like, they have not accomplished anything for the talent level that they had. Now, was it a good win for Miami? Of course it was, definitely. I mean, anytime you're able to beat a ranked opponent, whether Texas A&M deserved to be ranked or not, that's very questionable. But it's a better team than they were last year, without a doubt, Miami, that is. But I still wouldn't necessarily sell the farm to bet the mortgage on Miami just because they beat a 5-7 team last year who has not won a road game in 2 years. So they're better, but, you know, it's just, we're going to have to see how they play. Now, they play Bethune-Cookman this week, so there's another no contest game there. But, you know, that game might be a little tougher towards the end of the year. One of the other ones was kind of crazy, man. The SEC West, anyway, has really kind of gotten off to a slow start this year, kind of looking rough. The wheels are coming off a little bit. You know, Alabama lost at home to Texas by 10 points. That was a pretty crazy, you know, a lot of people expected Texas to win, but man, to see Alabama lose at home by 10 points to a non, at least right now, non-SEC team, it's kind of like what we saw with Clemson. You know, they are starting to have some cracks in the foundation. Now, I'm not saying Nick Saban is going anywhere or Alabama's not still one of the best teams in the country, but really what that game showed me, what a lot of these games around the country showed me, is how crazy is it that we thought, a lot of people thought, NIL and the transfer portal would be the downfall of college football. It would ruin the game. But on the flip side of that coin, it has really brought parity that we have craved for so long, because now you're seeing teams like Texas and teams like Florida State, where you're able to pull a lot of these guys in from the portal and through NIL, where it's not just Alabama, Georgia, and Ohio State and Michigan who are stacked at the top. You are now able to kind of spread that talent out a little bit. And really, to me, that's the crazy thing, is that those two things have brought parity to a degree back to college football. And I think this year would be a great year for the 12-team playoff when you look at what the Pac-12 has done, when you look at some of the teams out of the Big Ten. And there's a lot of teams I feel like that could be contenders this year. But, you know, even talking while we're in the vein of the SEC, you saw Tennessee come out. Now, I know they have a game against Florida next week, a rivalry game, so maybe there was a little bit of look ahead, even though I'm not really sure why you're looking ahead to Florida. Even though some people think they're going to beat Tennessee, They only beat Austin Peay, I think it was 30-13. Again, that speaks to what when you see Florida State go out and beat a Sun Belt team by 53 points, whereas you saw a lot of the other teams struggle against lesser opponents. It really does speak to what Florida State was able to do on Saturday by blowing out Southern Miss the way they did. And so that's really just my thoughts on a couple of the other games that I thought were notable to touch on without going too far in depth. I mean, we can also mention we saw Virginia Tech lose to Purdue, who's in year one of a new coach with a new quarterback. That kind of situation doesn't look as good as maybe it did in week one. So, you know, and we'll kind of follow some of the teams throughout the year and see, you know, your future opponents up and down. Duke blew out a nobody, so there's not a whole lot to take there. Again, Syracuse really hasn't played anybody yet. So as the games progress, as the season progress, we'll revisit some of these teams. And the last thing to talk about before we get up out of here, guys, is a lot of the renovations, like we touched on earlier, that are coming to Doak. And these things are still going through a lot of the approval process, but it looks like some really big changes are coming. The reduction in capacity is going to happen. They're going to go to chair back seating, wider seats. And while it's disappointing to a lot of people, and myself included, because I would love to see Doak packed at 80,000 capacity every single Saturday, the truth is it's hard to get people out of their air-conditioned homes in front of their big-screen TVs where they don't have to pay for, you know, exorbitantly priced beer and food and parking and all this stuff that you have to pay for, all these costs that come to going to a game. I'm still pretty nervous to look at my credit card statement after this last weekend down in Tallahassee. So the thing is, when you have stuff like that happening, the college football attendance as a whole has been trending downwards. You have to give them more people, fans, more reasons to come to games, and that's giving them a better game experience. We talked about, you know, we know that last year they had their first sellout since 2015 when it came to the Boston College game. They also sold out Florida. They got Virginia Tech sold out this year. But I know that a lot of that has to do with the product on the field. But they weren't terrible in 2016. And you just don't see a lot of sellouts anymore. And I think it's no worse to have a capacity of, say, 65,000 or 70,000, but have it at 90 to 100% capacity than have an 80% or an 80,000 seat stadium that's running at, say, 70-75% capacity every week. Now, of course, you want the team to be good because that brings in fans. You know, if there was 75,000 at Southern Miss, you know, what do you think there's going to be at Miami? That game's going to be sold out too. I'm pretty confident in that. So it's not the greatest because you want the crowd advantage, but at the same time, it's just the way things are trending, and it's becoming necessary to keep up with the times. You know, to me, again, I'm not a big phone person at the game, but Wi-Fi sure would be nice. You know, metal bleachers aren't that great. I mean, I would not be mad at chairback seating. I'm a little nervous because I like my seats. I don't want to lose my seats, but, you know, there's going to be an adjustment period for everybody. They said 2024, they're going to have on the west side of the stadium, there's going to be temporary seating while they do these renovations because it's going to take longer than one offseason. They're looking at debuting everything in 2025. You're going to have upgraded restrooms and concessions, which we really need because the situation there Saturday night was not the greatest. And then, like, they ran out of a lot of food before halftime. The bathroom lines, you missed almost a half a quarter. So those types of things really need to be updated. You're going to have new things in the concourse area, new gathering areas. And this is also going to open up the door for Florida State to use Doak Campbell as a little bit of a mixed-use facility to have other events there when they're not using it for football so you can generate additional revenue. You're keeping up with the times. And like I said, you're just giving people a better game day experience. Of course, none of us like the reduction in capacity, but I feel like if you can give fans a better reason to come out, then you will be at capacity more often. And it sounds, I mean, they're going to do it anyway, so you might as well get adjusted to it. I'm not 100% sure if they're going forward with the partial roof. That's going to take some getting used to. But as long as they keep what we love about Doak, the old school feel with some new school amenities, I think that that's okay. Because Doak really is a special place. It's one of the only college football cathedrals left. And I don't think you want to touch with, you don't want to mess with that heritage. You don't want to mess with what makes it what it is. But I'm not mad at some better game day experience things coming through. So we'll have to see how things play out with what all they're going to go forward with. But I've, you know, just kind of been keeping up through the booster emails of the changes that are coming. And, you know, the LED lights were only the tip of the iceberg because there is a lot coming, especially in 2024. So we'll have to wait to see how that plays out. But you're moving Florida State into the modern era of football. And this is something that we've seen since Michael Alford took over, who does an excellent job as the AD. He's very forward thinking, not scared to put Florida State out there to, you know, say we need to spend this money to stay in front of things. You got the football only facility being built. And Florida State really is putting themselves in a position to be at the forefront of college football with success on the field and the new facilities and the modernization of the stadium. And a lot of that has to do with the strong leadership that you see now. So you have to trust that they know what they're doing. They put in the studies. And, you know, something else that they talked about was they said that a lot of fans, I think it was over 50%, roughly 50% of fans, drive from over 200 miles to get to Tallahassee. And I personally drive almost 400 miles one way just to get there. I'm telling you guys, like that drive home to Charlotte on Sunday was brutal. But, you know, if you want to make it to the games, you're going to be there. But I think it's just an additional draw for people who have to drive from so far away to have that better game day experience. Now, realistically, what we need to do is Florida State needs to build a couple hotels on campus or something, because the hotel situation is really what's outrageous. And I think what kills a lot of attendance there, because it's an absolute nightmare to get a hotel on a game day weekend. But overall, like I said, just a lot of the renovations, I just wanted to touch on those because it is a really hot topic. But I think overall, it's going to be fine. It's just going to take some getting used to, because change sometimes makes us uncomfortable. But to put yourself where you want to be in one of the more, you know, again, a stadium that has a excellent history, but also modern features to have a great game day experience, that's what you're aiming for. And I think that they have that vision in mind as they work towards these. So with that being said, as more things roll out, we'll keep you guys updated, of course. Tomorrow, I'm going to be recording a special episode with FSU legend Marvin Jones, Marvin Shadetree Jones, one of the best to ever play in Garnet and Gold, as well as Micanopy 1851. We're going to be talking about his new laser center, some NIL stuff, and of course, FSU football. Get his thoughts on what he thinks of the Seminoles in 2023. That should be available on Friday, so make sure you guys tune in to that one. It's going to be a special episode. Cannot wait. We'll keep you updated with how things go for this Boston College game. If it gets moved, we'll try and get you guys updated on that. Hopefully they make a decision relatively soon, because being such a long trip, I'm sure they're going to have to get, you know, in the air to get there soon. So they're going to have to make a decision relatively quick. But we'll be back to talk about the game unless it gets canceled, which is certainly a possibility. And then again, like I said, going into next week with Clemson, we're going to try and have a lot of coverage for you guys, because regardless of whether they've fallen out of the rankings, regardless if it's a noon kickoff, that's still a big game, and you know Clemson's going to be ready for that game. They're going to be up. They're going to have their backs against the wall. I'm sure Dabo is probably already in the locker room, oh, woe is me, and the world hates us, and all this type of stuff that you know how Dabo is. So that's going to be a big game, and we're going to have a lot of coverage for you guys. But with that being said, we'll go ahead and wrap it up here. I appreciate everybody tuning in. I want to say thank you to our sponsor, Alumni Hall. Make sure you guys go check that out and enter that Seminole sweepstakes. Use code SPEAR to get 10% off your order. And then, like I said, stay tuned for the giveaway we have coming up. I'm just getting all the details together for it now. But with that being said, guys, thank you for listening. Thank you for your support. And go Noles.